I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is a recording of Juan David Ortiz. He's sitting alone in the Webb County Sheriff's interrogation room, talking to a deputy standing guard outside his door. Ortiz laughs as he recounts outrunning the state troopers who chased him.
Hey, who's the trooper I spoke to, man? The trooper couldn't keep up with me, dude. Tell him he needs to work out some more, man. Ha! Two of them. Two troopers, dude. I was fucking running, dude.
Tall and powerfully built with a military crew cut, he's dressed casually in a khaki button-down and jeans. His hands are cuffed behind his back. Soon, Calderon and Salinas enter the cramped room and sit across from him.
He was advised of his right to an attorney and his right to stop talking to us at any time, but he freely chose to continue talking to us.
Calderon wasn't surprised that Ortiz didn't ask for an attorney. In his experience, men, and cops in particular, often think they can talk their way out of trouble. But Ortiz wasn't just a cop. He was a military veteran and border intelligence supervisor who may have been privy to details of their investigation.
One, we're dealing with a cop, another cop. So he knows how we operate, not only tactics-wise, but interrogations, interviews. And two, he worked at that border intelligence center. So how much does he know of what we know? Are we compromised? Are we going to not be able to use things against them? Are we going to be able to use this, that, or the other? What details does he know?
When Calderon asked Ortiz about Erica Pena, Ortiz claimed he'd never met her. The only Erica he knew was from Brownsville, Texas, he said, the border town where he grew up. By now, of course, Erica had already identified Ortiz, his truck, and even her own vomit outside his house. Calderon and Salinas knew he was lying. When they showed him photographs of Melissa Ramirez and Claudine Loera, he denied knowing them as well. So the investigators tried a different approach. Calderon asked Ortiz if he hunted. Ortiz replied that, until recently, he'd held a hunting lease north of the city, where he hunted hogs with an AR-15. Calderon asked if he'd gone hunting that day. Ortiz said no, adding, "It's too damn hot to go hunting." Earlier that night, as Ortiz was being handcuffed, Calderon had noticed what appeared to be blood spatter on Ortiz's cowboy boots. Now, sitting across from him in the interrogation room, Calderon asked if he knew how the blood got there.
Do you know how you got blood on your boots? Blood on my boots?
Ortiz looked down at his boots. He didn't have a good answer. This is Gone South. I'm Jed Lipinski. Episode 5, The Monster. After realizing there were in fact droplets of dried blood on his cowboy boots, Ortiz quickly recovered. He laughed and said he had no idea how the blood got there.
Blood on my boots? I have no idea how I got blood on my boots. I have no idea until you guys told me that there was blood on the boots.
Calderon assumed Ortiz would continue denying he had anything to do with the murders or the assault on Erica Pena. So he decided to back off and ask Ortiz about himself instead.
We've found that as long as people are talking, that's the first step in getting them to cooperate and getting them to start talking about what they did.
To their surprise, Ortiz was more than happy to talk about his background. He explained that he had joined the Navy at 19, 2 months before 9/11. 2 years later, he'd served as a combat medic assigned to a Marine unit during Operation Iraqi Freedom. After 8 years of active duty, he was honorably discharged and joined the U.S. Border Patrol outside San Antonio. A promotion in 2016 brought him to Laredo, where he was promoted again to Border Intel Supervisor. According to Ortiz, he excelled at the job and was up for yet another promotion that fall. In those years, Ortiz had 2 children with his wife, Daniela, and earned multiple degrees, including a bachelor's in criminal justice and a master's in international relations. But despite his professional achievements, Ortiz admitted to battling personal demons. He struggled with anxiety, paranoia, nightmares, and extreme migraines, he said, adding that he'd also been abusing alcohol. He seemed to attribute these issues in part to his stint in Iraq, where he'd witnessed an innocent rice merchant riddled with bullets and men burned beyond recognition by a fuel tank explosion.
According to him, he'd seen a lot of death and a lot of things that he took with him later, and one of them I remember him describing was the smell of burning flesh and how certain things down the line, you know, present day, trigger that smell.
Ortiz said that 7 months earlier, a physician at the Laredo VA had diagnosed him with PTSD and prescribed him an array of medications: Paxil for depression and anxiety, Trazodone for nightmares, Gabapentin for migraines, and Divalproex for irritability and anger.
I just can't believe how many pills I got put on like that.
According to Ortiz, he'd been squared away until the VA prescribed him the medications. After that, he said, his life had, quote, turned to shit.
Going to the VA fucked up my life, got me here. I was squared away, motherfucker, until I started going to the VA and my life went to shit.
It seemed to Calderon that Ortiz was using the VA story as a defense for something he hadn't yet confessed to. So Calderon interrupted with a direct question.
I was point blank asking him, you know, what are you trying to tell us by this? Are you trying to say that, you know, because of this medication you killed people? Are you trying to tell us that because of your appointments at the VA, people had to die and get shot?
You're saying that you felt like you were losing control or something? What is it that you're feeling now? Help us understand what it is that you're feeling so we can try to determine what you're trying to tell us.
But Ortiz didn't answer Calderon's questions. All Ortiz would say is that he'd been squared away until his visit to the VA earlier that year.
From the day I was born until February of this year, I was a squared away bastard. And from February to now, I've had like 40 fucking appointments and I'm looking at me.
In the video, Ortiz gestures to his right hand, which is shackled to a chair. For the next 4 hours, Ortiz continued to deny that he knew anything about the assault on Erica Pena or the 2 murders.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
We're talking about Erica. She's not the only one who picked up, though. I'd like to know if you know why you're here.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about right now.
Ortiz's account of the previous night was simple. His wife and kids had gone to San Antonio to watch the Canelo Alvarez fight, he said, and he'd stayed home to wait for the plumber to fix a leak. That evening, he'd taken his meds, then drunk several Bud Lights, a combination that he said sometimes caused him to black out. The next thing he remembered was the troopers shouting at him outside the Stripes convenience store. He'd run from them, he said, because they were freaking him out. Frustrated by his continued denials, Calderon and Salinas decided to take a break.
We eventually have to reassess how we're going to tackle the interview.
By this point, the station was packed with law enforcement and local officials, including the district attorney and Customs and Border Protection leadership. Many of them were crowded inside the station's viewing room, watching the interrogation unfold on a closed-circuit TV.
It was a madhouse in there. It was a lot of people in there. I mean, this was a supervisory Border Patrol agent. It was all unfolding. It was all new.
Earlier that evening, after Ortiz fled from the state troopers, cops had failed to find Ortiz's weapon inside his truck, leading them to believe he was armed. But during the break in the interrogation, one of the cops at the station told Calderon that Ortiz's weapon, a .40-caliber handgun, had been sitting in Ortiz's truck bed all along, which probably explained why Ortiz had pretended his phone was a gun before he was captured. The cop told Calderon that he'd examined the gun and made two discoveries. One, the gun's magazine was missing several rounds. And two, the bullets inside appeared to match the shell casings found at the scenes of both Melissa and Claudine's murders. At this stage of the interview, Calderon and Salinas had yet to present Ortiz with any of the evidence they'd collected thus far. But when they walked back into the interrogation room, they decided they'd waited long enough.
Why are there rounds missing from your gun right now? Give me something crazy. Give me the wildest dream you have. Why are we missing rounds from your mag?
When Ortiz failed to respond, Calderon told him they were going to match his gun to the shell casings left at the crime scenes. Ortiz stared at the floor as Calderon repeated, "Look at me, JD, look at me." His arrogance at the start of the interview was gone. District Attorney Alaniz, who was watching from the viewing room next door, saw the transformation.
So when these facts start just coming right at you, and they're just pounding you in the face with these facts and this evidence, is when he starts to soften up. Because I think by that time he was convinced that the jig was up, and everybody in that room knew exactly what he had done.
Calderon and Salinas urged Ortiz to tell the truth. They appealed to his background as a veteran, a border agent, and a father.
And Ortiz was listening very intently and contemplating every word when they were talking about those three important values, you know, your country, your family, the law enforcement community.
Ortiz then made a simple request. In his phone was a photo of him and his family on Father's Day. He asked if Calderon could print it out for him.
I told him that I would do everything my ability to get him that picture.
Ortiz then asked Calderon to remove the handcuffs.
I remember telling everybody in the room, "Guys, get ready, here it comes." And he opens the handcuffs and takes them off. You know, Ortiz just rubs his wrists from having those handcuffs on for, you know, 8-9 hours. And the floodgates open from there.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
They said it couldn't be done. They say it bordered on impossible.
When someone says I can't do something, I usually agree with them.
And now, against all odds, this completely mediocre comedy podcast has done the unthinkable. They
got listeners.
We got listeners.
No way.
Amazing.
Now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm so happy we're at Odyssey now.
Oh my God, they're amazing.
The Commercial Break Podcast. You heard it here last.
Finally, after nearly 8 hours in the interrogation room, Ortiz began to tell investigators about the night Melissa Ramirez was killed.
So when he eventually comes around and starts telling us about his specific actions, and in this case specifically Melissa Ramirez, he tells her how he picked her up and took her to go buy something to get high. And she got high and she passed out in his truck. And he was pretty annoyed at the fact that she was passed out in his truck.
Realizing she may have overdosed, Ortiz said he debated dropping her at the emergency room and driving off.
Driving around, I drove to the Shell Medical Center. There's cameras, there's cameras to see my truck. I was just going to dump her there in New York. And I was like, fuck, man.
He figured that if a camera caught him at the hospital and something happened, that, you know, they might come after him. So he says he gets on 35 and starts heading into North Webb County.
When Melissa finally came to, she was annoyed to discover they were in a desolate area miles outside Laredo. According to Ortiz, she began insulting him.
She starts asking him, you know, where are they? And, you know, she calls him a pendejo and tells him to pull over and that she has to pee. He complies and pulls over so she can pee. And at that point, he decides that that was it, that that was the only option he had left for some reason was to kill her there on the side of the road.
Although Ortiz admitted to killing Melissa, he did not describe the act itself. Calderon pressed Ortiz for more. Did he tell her what he was going to do? Did she try to defend herself? But all Ortiz said was, "You guys know what happened." Ortiz insisted the killing was impulsive, repeating, "I did not plan it, guys." Calderon sensed Ortiz was laying the groundwork for a second-degree murder charge instead of first degree, which requires premeditation. Ortiz went on to say that he left Melissa's body where she fell. On the ride back, he said he stopped at Pizza Hut before returning home to what he called my lovely wife and kids. When Ortiz showed up for work the next day at the Border Intel Center, he was asked to run the plate of the Laredo cop spotted near the crime scene. But Ortiz said that was the extent of his involvement in the investigation. By then, he said, the reality of what he'd done was sinking in.
He does claim that he did feel kind of bad for what he did because she had kids and whatnot, and she had a family.
But Ortiz said he managed to convince himself there was no reason to feel bad for Melissa. She had chosen to live on the street, he said, rather than care for her children.
He starts justifying his actions by basically saying that what he did needed to be done and that, you know, he was doing the right thing.
A few days later, Ortiz said he returned to San Bernardo.
He was driving around and, I guess, thinking about what happened. He says that at one point, quote unquote, this is where the monster comes out.
I was continuing driving on Sunbed, and this is where the monster came out.
Ortiz said he began questioning why Laredo PD allowed sex workers to openly walk the streets at night. He claimed that he'd previously told the cops to do something about it, but they never did. So Ortiz said he decided to clean up the streets himself.
And he begins to tell us how basically he was going to grab the bull by the horns and tackle this problem by himself. And to him, that meant killing people.
Ortiz said he picked up Claudine Loera a week or so later. It didn't take long for her to mention the death of Melissa Ramirez, he said. When Ortiz told her he'd heard about it, she proposed that the two of them go check out the murder scene.
The conversation came up about Melissa and how it would be interesting to see where Melissa was killed, and he said that he knew the area.
But as they drove out Route 83 toward Jeffries Road, Ortiz said Claudine had second thoughts.
And as we get to 83 for a little penis, that's when she starts really freaking out. No, dude. No, fuck that. No, dude. No, I don't want to go after all.
Ortiz said Claudine was suddenly convinced that he'd killed Melissa.
And when they're heading out there, she does start freaking out. about, you know, it was you, were you the one who killed her? And he heads toward IH-35. And halfway there, he pulls over, tells her to get out of the car. And that's where he shoots her in the back of the head.
It was 2 days later, while cruising San Bernardo, that Ortiz said he spotted Erica Pena. He repeated the story Erica had told the cops, that they'd bought drugs and gone to his house before driving to the Circle K. But he insisted he had not tried to kill her. She had become hysterical in the truck, he said, so he'd pulled his gun in its holster to calm her down.
So he pulled a pistol in the holster, and that she misconstrued that as him having pulled a pistol out of the holster and pointing it at her.
After Erica ran away, Ortiz said he expected law enforcement to come after him. So he went home and assembled an arsenal of weapons in preparation for a standoff with the cops.
I grabbed my 9mm, grabbed my 40 cal, started loading them. Grabbed my AR-15, started fucking loading them.
He gets his AR-15 ready, his pistols, and some other stuff he had around the house there. And he's waiting and waiting.
But investigators were busy interviewing Erica, and they didn't immediately show up.
I guess his minutes felt like hours because he says we were taking way too long. So he decided to go back at it and continue what he was doing.
Ortiz headed back to San Bernardo. On the way, he stopped to buy some beer before picking up another woman named Giselda Cantu. The two of them headed north on I-35 to the same area where he'd killed Claudine. This time, though, he saw cops positioned along his route.
He automatically assumed that those cops out there were waiting for him. So he exits and heads north and ends up under one of the underpasses on 35.
Ortiz felt that the cops were closing in and that his life was over. He confessed to Giselda that he was the one who had killed Melissa and Claudine and that he planned to kill himself. He then told her to walk away. But Giselda didn't walk away. Instead, she tried to talk him out of committing suicide.
Ms. Cantu starts telling him how he shouldn't do that and that, you know, God would forgive him and that he didn't need to do what he was doing.
Ortiz said he repeatedly told her to walk away.
Walk away, just walk away, okay? Walk away. I'm telling you to walk away, but you're not listening to me.
And he killed her too, right there under the overpass.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It had taken close to 9 hours, but Calderon and Salinas had finally managed to elicit what they believed to be a full confession to three murders.
We have Melissa accounted for, Claudine accounted for. We have the person on 35 at the time. Now we know Miss Cantu. And then out of the blue, he tells us about a crime we didn't even know had been committed. And that was Janelle Ortiz.
After Ortiz confessed to killing Melissa, Claudine, and Giselda, Calderon and Salinas thought they'd reached the end of the interview. But Ortiz wasn't finished. Prior to killing Giselda, he said he had picked up a trans sex worker he knew named Janelle Ortiz. Like Claudine and Erica before her, Janelle had quickly surmised that Ortiz was the killer. As they drove north, she openly accused him of killing her friends. Ortiz said Janelle was strong and he worried she would fight back. But when he ordered her out of the truck at gunpoint, Ortiz said she seemed resigned to her fate. According to Ortiz, Janelle told him, "Do what you have to do."
And he told us exactly where we would find Janelle Ortiz. As he's telling us about this crime that we didn't know had been committed, deputies, investigators, crime scene investigators, and senior command staff rush out the door and go try and locate this crime scene.
It was now 12 o'clock in the afternoon. LaGuardia Loca had been up all night, reporting and live streaming about Ortiz's capture and the discovery of the third victim.
Like I said, there is a third victim, 22-mile marker, 35.
Not long after Ortiz admitted to killing Janelle, she got a tip that police were en route to a new murder scene where a trans sex worker had been killed. She was soon speeding north on I-35.
Apparently, they have found another body, fourth body of a female at the 15-mile marker northbound. I am headed that way.
LaGuardia Loca knew two trans sex workers on San Bernardo, but she'd been texting with one of them, Emily Varela, just minutes earlier. She assumed the victim was Janelle. LaGuardia Loca had known Janelle for years and had posted candid interviews with her on Facebook. She described Janelle as a jokester who protected other women on the street. But she was also an addict who had endured years of abuse from men who picked her up. As LaGuardia Loca drove to the crime scene, she was almost overcome with emotion.
Please, at this time, just be vigilant. I'm headed that way. Another body has been found at the 15-mile marker on 35.
Minutes later, LaGuardia Loca spotted a half dozen patrol units on the shoulder of I-35, where piles of gravel lined the side of the road. Behind them lay Janelle's body, exactly where Ortiz said she'd be. Back in the interrogation room, Ortiz told investigators that, having killed both Giselda and Janelle that night, he'd returned to San Bernardo to continue his murder spree.
According to him, he was just going to keep killing people until he was stopped.
But when he reached San Bernardo again, he paused to use the restroom at a Stripes convenience store and left his service weapon in the truck.
He stopped at the gas station, left his gun in his car instead of taking it down with him.
And so, when two state troopers confronted him as he walked out, Ortiz found himself unarmed. He decided to run. If there was one thing he'd learned from the undocumented immigrants he'd spent the last 9 years chasing, Ortiz said, it was this: never stop running and you won't get caught. But trapped in the parking garage, he had nowhere left to run. Calderon and Salinas felt confident that Ortiz had told them everything and that they'd reached the end of the interrogation.
He told us things we didn't know he did and put himself at every crime scene with every victim.
The investigators thanked Ortiz for his honesty. Ortiz then repeated his earlier request for the photo of him and his family.
It's the one in particular, man. It's my kids are sitting on the counter in the kitchen. My wife's right there.
And I told him that I'd try and get him that photo. And before the end of the night, I printed out that photo for him and I gave it to him.
That afternoon, Ortiz was charged with 4 counts of murder and 1 count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Officers who executed a search warrant at his house found that he had indeed prepared for a standoff.
He had an AR-15 on the kitchen counter. He had another pistol ready to go. And it looked very apparent that what he told us about that expectation of that confrontation with us was accurate and correct.
Ortiz's confession marked the end of a 12-day odyssey for Calderon and his criminal investigations unit. Calderon was exhausted, but satisfied by the outcome.
The easiest way to describe it is, you know, we felt ton of relief that we were able to accomplish what we set out to accomplish.
Still, Ortiz's confession was not the end of the story. Left unanswered was what had caused a military veteran, Border Patrol supervisor, and father of two with no criminal history to commit serial murder. Ortiz's actions were clear. His motives remained a mystery.
We knew the who, the what, and the when. The why is what we're still left with trying to figure out.
Border Patrol agent Juan David Ortiz remains behind bars tonight. Authorities are calling him a rogue agent and a serial killer.
You meet a young man, never been arrested for any violent offense, never had any domestic violence insinuation from spouse or history.
He's in a pressure cooker, you know, so he's already a ticking time bomb.
I was just so shocked. He was like someone you would trust. It just made me think, man, wow, you never know a person. You can never know a person.
If you have questions or information for the Gone South team, please email us at gonesouthpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave us a review. Gone South is written and narrated by me, Jed Lipinski. Executive produced by Jed Lipinski, Tom Lipinski, and Ken Lee. Our story editor is Tom Lipinski. Directed by Lloyd Lockridge. Produced by Anna Worrell. Edited, mixed, and mastered by Chris Basil. Original music by Marshall Chadbourne. Production support from Ian Mott, Bill Schultz, Bob Tabador, and Sean Cherry. Special thanks to J.D. Crowley, Jenna Weiss-Berman, Maura Curran, Josephina Francis, Kurt Courtney, and Hilary Schuff. Gone South is an Odyssey original.
A new true crime podcast from the team behind Up and Vanished. In 2016, Justin Alexander, an adventurer, was invited on a trek by an Indian holy man. They headed to a spiritual ground in the Himalayan mountains, a place beyond civilization. The holy man returned and said nothing, but Justin was never seen again. What happened to him? Dive deep into our investigation and uncover the strange events surrounding Justin's disappearance. In Status Untraced. Check out this sneak preview.
And this last experience he had with Rawat, I didn't feel good about it. In fact, I felt it was dangerous. It sounds strange, but I just, in my mother's heart, something was not okay. I felt that he was a nefarious character.
Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.